Welcome to Post Status Draft, the official podcast for Post Status, a website with news and information for WordPress professionals. Today, I talk with Joe Casabona. Joe is a lifelong WordPress learner, front-end developer, and instructor. He has courses at WP in 1 month, and he hosts his own podcast where he interviews WordPress professionals called How I Built It. Joe and I talk about learning WordPress and teaching WordPress and all the stuff around that. If you teach WordPress within your organization or to others, I think you would really enjoy this. Or if you're looking to learn WordPress or learn about code in general, I think this is a show for you. If you enjoy this podcast, you can get a lot more quality news and analysis from the Post Status Club. Check out our current club members, site partners, and join the club on our website at poststatus.com/club. You'll be joining more than 900 wonderful club members, and you'll never miss important WordPress news again. Also, go to poststatus.com/publish to learn about the Post Status Publish event that's going to be in Atlanta August 3rd and 4th. It's going to be a lot of fun. Today, I'd like to feature one of our partners, Yoast. Yoast SEO gives you 24/7 support from their support team and extra features such as a redirect manager, recommended internal links, tutorial videos, and integration with Google Webmaster Tools. Thanks to Yoast for being a Post Status partner, and go to yoast.com for more information. Now, here's our show. Hello and welcome to the Draft Podcast. Today I have a special guest with me, Mr. Joe Casabona. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Joe is a front-end web developer and an instructor. He is known for several things that you may have heard of. The How I Built It podcast is one of my personal favorites these days. And then WP in 1 month is your teaching course. And Joe, your landing page is casabona.org, which is easy enough. So folks should go there and check out more stuff about Joe. And if you can't tell already, Joe likes to share things that he's learning and get information out of people and take information and distribute that to others to help teach and instruct so everybody can kind of up their game. So Joe, today we're going to talk about learning and sharing what we learn. Sound good to you?
Yeah, that sounds great. And that was a really great way of putting it, actually. My parents always told me when I was growing up that you're very inquisitive, but like they would say it in like a bad way.
Is that like code for annoying?
yeah, exactly. Like, just shut up and leave me alone. So, I'm glad that inquisitiveness is paying off now.
Yeah. So you've been doing web stuff for a pretty long time. When did you get your start?
Yeah, I started in 2001, 2002, something like that. My parish came to me and they knew I was good with computers. And so they said, hey, you're good with computers. Can you make us a website? And I said, oh, I don't know how to do that. And they said, we'll pay you. And I said, yeah, I'll do that. And that was my first gig and my first paying gig. And so I've been making websites ever since because I really enjoyed it. So
cool. Well, I thought it'd be fun today to talk about our processes, I guess, for how we learn, how we like to learn, and then how we share that with others and the benefits of that. So I guess, first off, are you self-taught or how did you learn in the first place?
Yeah, so I guess, I do have a formal education in computer science and software engineering. I have my master's in software engineering, but since I graduated from college in 2007 and my master's in 2009, I was self-taught before that. And the way I taught myself that first website was I downloaded a quote-unquote educational version of Microsoft Front Page, and I would do something in Front Page, and then I noticed that there was like a source tab. So I was looking at what was being generated by that. And then I guess probably about a year or two later, my friend Steve Mikosh was like, you should just stop using Front Page. And you should. So from then on, I was using Notepad++ to write all of my code. And I would still like do something in Front Page and see how the code was generated and then like write it out by hand. Which is maybe like, I mean, by today's standards, pretty kludgy, right? You've got like CodePen and a bunch of other things that will help you with front end development. But that's how I did it. And I'm So now I don't know. People were always baffled by the fact that I wrote code by hand, like in the mid 2000s.
Yeah. I kind of backed my way into it. My undergrad is industrial engineering, where we only had a couple of programming-ish classes, but I certainly didn't learn anything about web programming through those. Maybe like what's a loop type of thing, like in a general sense, you know, like a for each loop. Mm-hmm. But yeah, very basic. And sounds like you really started with kind of static websites. And for me, I guess that like the first like week or so that I was looking at how do you build a website? I was that way, but I pretty quickly found WordPress. So most of my learning was like kind of starting at the install WordPress level and then kind of diving deeper down into what makes that happen over time, which is kind of backwards from the traditional sense of learning theory and then working your way up. So we kind of came at it from opposite directions.
Yeah, it's interesting. In like 2004, I said to that same friend, Steve, I said, hey, man, I'm doing all these websites and I'm like updating the source by hand. I think I'm going to make a way to just like so they could do it without knowing code. And I did not use the term content management system at all in the words I said to him. And he said, have you heard of this new thing called WordPress? And I was like, no. And so I started using WordPress in 2004, and it was very haphazard. Like we had the blog part and then I had like the PHP files for the non-blog pages, like right in core. There were different times back in 2004.
Yeah. And how soon after you started learning before you started teaching or, you know, showing things to other people?
Yeah, so I did a bit of tutoring in college, like on the books tutoring for students who were taking entry-level programming to kind of show them that stuff. But like teaching in a professional capacity, I went to grad school on the assumption, or I guess with the necessity that I would get a teaching assistantship, because then they pay for the education and I wasn't about to take on like another $50,000 in debt. That's when I really officially started teaching, and I loved it. So at the end of my program, I basically said to my alma mater, the University of Scranton, if you guys ever need an adjunct faculty member, you know, like I'm still in the area. And at the time I was working for myself. So I said, I would love to, you know, teach more classes if you need it. And it turns out somebody from the department was retiring. So they gave me her courses, and I've been teaching ever since in some way, shape, or form.
Nice. Did you ever consider full-time faculty type of work?
Yes, but it was a very short-lived consideration because most colleges, you need a PhD to be a full-time tenure track professor. So, you know, it's, I won't say it's like off the table, but it's like another 6 years of school. So,
yeah. Cool. And I guess for a little bit of my history on the same front, I've been teaching sort of like, but I've basically been writing about WordPress stuff ever since I started learning it. So I started writing about WordPress around 2010, which is when I got back into the web. I learned about WordPress and web stuff in 2007, 2008, and took a short hiatus while I went to graduate college and did a real career. And but I was on the road a lot and in hotels, and I would learn web stuff at night while I was in a hotel. So that's kind of how I got really back into it and started writing about WordPress and stuff while I was traveling at night. And to me, writing helped me learn, even if it wasn't like tutorial style writing, but just like the ecosystem in general.
Yeah.
But your teaching has primarily been either in person or like audio/video, right?
Yeah. So.
In a book.
Yeah. I guess my first foray into WordPress teaching, yeah, was I. I wrote tutorials for Envato, like the Touch Plus network.
Okay.
Which was like, I think my first introduction to Tom McFarlane.
Mm-hmm.
But we hadn't met in person until Post-Status Publish, which is funny. So I've got two books, but most of my teaching has been in person or through videos. And there are two. I mean, the three of those things are very different, right? In-person classes, you can very much see when your students are not understanding what you're saying. It's written all over their faces. And so you get that kind of immediate feedback, which is nice.
How do you adjust to that when you're teaching in person? Because I'm imagining a lot of our listeners may be listening to this and thinking that they are teaching people within their agency, maybe, or maybe they're teaching at like local incubators or something, or meetups or whatever. So how do you gauge your in-person audience?
Yeah, it's, I think once you get good at reading people, so if you think you're good at reading people, you know, just like look at them continually, I would say like make a point, pause, see what they look like, see if there's any questions. I made it very clear from the beginning of each semester that please, if you are confused, other people are confused too. Like you are not the only person in this class who's confused. So ask your question. But it usually came down to, I would look around the room and I would see if someone just looks like flabbergasted, and I would only look for one person to do that. Cause then I knew I kind of had to readjust and I would reword whatever it is I said. I would use other examples. I'm big on analogies. So I would use a couple of different analogies to see if one stuck. In one particularly tough instance, I was teaching a graduate level database course, but it was for business majors, like people in the MBA.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of prerequisites that none of them took. And so I went into the class and I said, okay, I assume you guys know how to write code. If it's not PHP, it's probably ASP, right? And they all said no. And I said, okay, well, I assume you guys at least know HTML and CSS, right? And all of them said no. So I had to essentially nix my first three, I guess it would be the last three of the semester, but I had to nix my whole first week of plans and start from the beginning. Which is tough. Like when you're teaching within an agency or doing something online, you know, you have the course description, people want to take your course, and you can generally assume that if people are registering for your course themselves, they have the prerequisites. You should definitely explicitly state them still, but they're opting to take it themselves, as opposed to, in this instance, it was a group of students who had to take this course. They probably read on Rate My Professor that I'm an easy teacher, because I am. And they got written into it without taking any of the prerequisites. So I went back to the front office at the end of that semester and I said, you have, like, stop writing people into this course. Make them take the prereqs, because we are behind now. So that one was particularly tough. But usually it's, you know, there's one person who just, like, looks completely lost by what you're saying. And you can kind of assume that that person is not the only person.
So if somebody's doing a one-off type of thing, sometimes I feel like I have this material and I want to get through it. And I feel like it's easy to just kind of plow through.
Mm-hmm.
And when I remember one time specifically, I did that and I just kind of plowed through it, even though I wasn't really sure how much I had the audience with me. And then when I got done, I asked what questions people had. And the first question made it obvious that I should have stopped after like 3 minutes and asked, because their first question was like more basic than the introductory material to the talk. So when you encounter a scenario like that where you're teaching someone, but then, you know, they kind of discover that they weren't prepared to learn what you're teaching.
Mm-hmm.
How can you adjust in real time to like make it more applicable to your audience?
Yeah, you try, because you do. You have a limited amount of time in that sense. If, you know, if you're giving a WordCamp talk where, you know, maybe the it was advertised differently than the way you prepared the talk, and so most of the people who are attending don't know what you're talking about. Or in my case, there was one time I spoke at a blogging convention about like making your first child theme for WordPress. And the first question was a comment that was like, you sounded very smart, but none of us have any idea what you said. Mm-hmm. And that's like, I mean, that's a deer in the headlights moment. So like what you said, you know, I start to introduce the topic. I say, okay, here are the things I'm going to talk about today. And then I try to gauge the room. I've been doing this for a while, so I can kind of tell if people are prepared to learn that or not. If I'm doing a one-on-one, I'll explicitly say, like, here's where I'm going to start. Are you comfortable with this? And if not, I do go back. I try to lay some groundwork. And the amount of groundwork I lay is dependent on how long I have. So in the case of that one semester, I knew I could take the first three classes and then we could make the time up in the end somehow. If it's only an hour, then I try to take the first 10 or 15 minutes and I give like a rough overview. I define all the terms I'm going to use, because I think that's a big one. Even if nobody is programmed in PHP and you're going to talk about child themes, just defining what PHP is and what it does and some of the terminology you're using will help them stick a little bit better. And then I'll say, you probably need more information on this, and then here are my recommended resources for mm-hmm. HTML, CSS, PHP, whatever.
I might be able to guess this based on some of the stuff that you're offering with WP in 1 month, but what do you think are like the most important things that a new developer, like someone that's serious about getting into WordPress development, what do you think are some of the most important concepts for them to grasp?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I actually wrote out a list of this few months ago, like 5 things that you need to know to do WordPress development. One is HTML and CSS. Like, you're not going to get anywhere without HTML and CSS.
That's our version of the prereqs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If you're going to build a WordPress theme, then you need a basic understanding of HTML and CSS.
Right. You should know PHP. You don't need to be an expert, but you should definitely be able to work with it. And so therefore...
I have a question about that.
Yeah.
When most WordPress functions, if you are, you know, they're mapped on top of PHP. So the underlying functionality is a mix of PHP and MySQL. But do you think a solid understanding of WordPress functions without necessarily understanding everything that PHP does below it could suffice in that case? Or do you think some fundamental understanding of PHP is truly important for, you know, WordPress theming or some, you know, like not like heavy plugin development, but, you know, kind of your typical front end development with this hybrid model of theming that WordPress has?
Yeah, that's exactly right. If you're just going to make WordPress themes, right, and you want to get up and running quickly, you should know the WordPress functions. You should become familiar with the WordPress codex, or I guess it's developer.wordpress.org now, maybe. Mm-hmm. You don't need to be an expert in PHP. And I have an ebook called PHP, A Primer for WordPress, where the things that I think in PHP you should know before you start doing WordPress development is variable assignments and types. And so, like, you should know that PHP is a weak typed language. You should know arrays, if statements, and loops and functions. Those are the 5 things that if you're going to do WordPress development, you should probably know with PHP beforehand, because those things will definitely come up. Object oriented might not, probably yeah. won't, if you're doing just WordPress themes, but you're yeah. definitely going to have to make function calls. You're definitely going to have to work within a loop and do if statements.
I got you. So you this is more like understand the way PHP is laid out, or like how you speak PHP, more than how like a fundamental understanding of the language.
It's like you know, I guess it's like knowing a certain region's dialect, even if you mm-hmm. don't fully understand, like, you know the colloquialisms if you don't fully understand the language, at least.
Yeah. It reminds me of like when you learn a foreign language and the first stuff that you want to know is like all the bad words and slang.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's funny. So in addition to HTML, CSS, the basic structures of PHP, what about WordPress-specific concepts that you think are the most important to understand early on?
Yeah, I think that when you're doing a WordPress theme, for example, you should know the template hierarchy, right? Because everything is going to drill down to that eventually. You should know that you only really need three files for a WordPress theme. Well, you only really need two files for a WordPress theme, but let's just say three for fun. You need style.css because that's how the theme is defined. You need index.php because that is the end all be all. That's how the theme is going to be displayed on the front end. And that's really the only template. Every other template falls back to that one. And then I'm going to say functions.php because you're probably going to come across it and you should understand what that is and how it works.
Sure.
And then like every tutorial you read for how to do something is going to say, just throw this code in your functions.php file, which is, I mean, there's probably countless episodes of podcasts on the merits of that, but
if you catch all bucket.
Yeah, exactly. But if you don't know what that is, then those tutorials aren't going to be very helpful to you.
Yeah. I also found a lot of value explaining the template hierarchy to people that I worked with in an agency where not everybody was like a WordPress developer that I was teaching this stuff to, but I actually worked with our project managers and our designers to try to introduce them to the concept of the template hierarchy. Because to me, I found it valuable to explain like different views in WordPress. Mm-hmm. And for them to get an idea of these things, because it applies to like, what are we going to design? Because you might not want to design like a category landing page, but in WordPress, the way it works is the category landing page is still going to be there on the site at the end of the day. So for us, it was important that the designer and the UI developers, like even if they're not like digging into every aspect of the code of this website, they need to understand that there's going to be a view there and we need to account for it because someone will click on like a category listing on the blog. And then like, is it going to look like the archive or do we have like a sane default for this view? And like the template hierarchy creates all these views. There are all these views that if you don't do anything with them, something's still going to happen there. And it can be a real sign of amateurism, I guess. If you send a website to production and like your homepage looks good, your single post page looks good, various page templates look fine, but then like you click on some random archive that WordPress creates and there's like nothing there. There's no styles that are specified for that. So I found the template hierarchy really valuable because then we could explain like, here's a generic archive. So we need to create some baseline for what this is going to be for this website. And I felt like that connected, but it's not the easiest concept to express to someone that's not a programmer.
Yeah, it really isn't. I mean, it's almost like explaining the difference between posts and pages to just someone who's never used WordPress before, right? Well, we have these things that are virtually the same, but they're definitely different. And now I'm going to try to tell you the difference. And that's... You're going to see exactly what you explained on a lot of projects if you don't have somebody knowledgeable about the hierarchy, right? So the things that always, I feel, get missed are like the search templates, the 404 page on the last few projects I've been on has always been like done at the last minute. And then just like a default archive view, right? Because people will jump in and do like just immediately the... a specific category or a specific tag template and then kind of ignore the archive.php. If you're using like underscores as a base, you will create these specific template parts and then ignore the template part that gets pulled in to archive.php. And having a solid understanding of that is important because like you said, something's going to get missed. Someone's going to click on a category and see just like this completely broken page for some seemingly unknown reason.
Yeah. Do you have any other common gotchas that you see on WordPress websites that are top of mind?
Ooh, common gotchas. Let's see. The difference between front page .php and home .php is always a good one. To jump to the end of this, I always just make a page template for the home page so that we don't run into that mess. I'm going to have a hard time explaining this. The main difference is that I think home.php will default to the, is it the blog page? And then frontpage.php will default to whatever is set specifically as the front page.
Right.
Yeah. Which are weird names. And it's for backwards compatibility all the way back to like WordPress, like whenever they introduced pages. But that's always an interesting one because people will make one or the other, and then something will look broken for some reason. And then I'm sure there are a bunch of other gotchas that I'm just completely blanking on because I'll just see it and fix it like immediately. Make sure to set your permalinks. That's not like a programming thing. That's just a setting up a WordPress site thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just interesting trying to think through what might be in a curriculum, I guess, when you're either teaching inside your agency or if you're doing course development or something like that.
Go ahead.
No.
That's actually, I'm glad you put it that way, right? Because I released a course on Udemy for WordPress theme development, and thinking through that stuff was what's a modern WordPress developer's workflow? I actually did an entire primer on PHP. It's like 11 lectures of here's PHP if you don't know it. And then setting up your local development environment was another curriculum or another part of the curriculum. And luckily, I developed this course around the same time Local by Flywheel released its Windows beta. So I didn't have to.
Nice.
Yeah, I didn't have to create like a whole thing about MAMP and creating a database. I just said like install local, because that's another thing, right? You need to explain to a first time developer who's doing anything more than HTML, CSS, and JavaScript that your computer does not understand PHP, and so you either need to do it on a server or you need to find something like Local by Flywheel, so that you can do PHP not in a production environment. So I guess that's like a just general first time developer gotcha. In the course, I also introduce underscores. That's the starter theme I like to use, and CMB2, because invariably if you're developing more than just like a plain Jane theme, if you're creating a website, you're probably going to need to create a plugin, and that plugin is probably going to, at the very least, need custom meta fields, and instead of writing those yourself, CMB2 is the best way to do it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm a big CMB2 fan.
Yeah, so I made sure to teach that because you're probably going to come across that. Definitely teach the difference between putting something in a theme and putting something in a plugin. So my WordPress theming course actually includes like a quick here's how to make a plugin in WordPress. So that you can kind of decouple your data from your view or your theme. And then it's just kind of going through the template parts. So here's a single template. Here's a default index template. Here's the header and the footer. Here's a sidebar, which isn't really a sidebar. It's just like an area that has other dynamic areas in it. And then I touch on hooks and filters and some security stuff, but the bulk of the course is really the templates.
What do you think are some of the big gotchas for people as they're learning? Are there certain snags that you think WordPress tends to have?
I think learning terminology, going back to the sidebars thing, is probably one of them. Because there are a lot of misnomers in WordPress, and that's not necessarily WordPress's fault. It's
roots in its blogging past.
Yeah, exactly. Or like, you know, like custom post types is something very difficult to explain to somebody at first, because it's not, you know, a better
it's
name
not
would
a
be
post.
Yeah, a better name would be custom content types or something like that.
Yeah, that's one that I wish 10 years ago they just would have mapped.
Yeah, right.
That's okay.
Yeah. And then as far as development goes, you know, things that you're probably going to do at first are put stuff in functions.php, because every tutorial you read is going to do that. You're going to copy code from Stack Overflow, and it's not going to work for some reason. Never use query posts. That was, I think I included that in like one of my first tutorials, and I just got like lambasted for that.
Yeah, I think fortunately that one's finally ship has sailed.
Yeah. Everything I've come across lately is just using WP query. So, and that's another thing that I made sure to explain is WP query, because if you're going to create a custom post type and grab it, then you should be probably using that. If you're going to display it anywhere except for the single and the archive page for that view.
I think one of the things that I've discovered when I see people talking about building stuff with WordPress is, like I mentioned earlier, the hybrid nature of WordPress, where you're really tossing in a good bit of PHP into HTML and CSS within the theming setup. I know in a lot of other ways to build websites, there's like a strict templating system. So they're using Twig or something like that. And, mm-hmm. You're not meshing, you know, PHP or whatever language it uses in with the HTML and CSS. It's more, you know, you've got these placeholders for where the title will go, but you're not like opening and closing PHP for it. You're using, you know, double curly brackets or whatever.
Right.
And it seems like some of the stuff that exists in WordPress really confuses a lot of front-end developers, that they may be a perfectly good front-end developer, but WordPress throws them off. And I'm curious if you've had experience like helping people get around that, or if it's just something you have to live with when you do WordPress development.
Yeah, it's, I don't, I'm, I guess a purist. I'll try very hard to, you know, like WordPress is a framework, and putting other frameworks on top of the framework is, I think, increases the learning curve. And I know that people are going to argue, like, you know, you can definitely argue that point. Like Genesis maybe makes it, I've never used Genesis, so this might be an uninformed statement. Genesis maybe makes theme development easier because it's a framework on top of another framework. You know, I if I'm teaching WordPress development, I'm going to do it as purely as possible. So, and that's what, again, one of the reasons I use underscores is it's developed by folks who are contributing to the WordPress open source project. And that's what a lot of the WordPress themes are, the, you know, default WordPress themes are based on now. And it doesn't, aside from theme architecture, like how the files are laid out, it doesn't make a lot of decisions for you. You know, there's not some basic CSS. This is not a theme that you can install and be ready to use. So you have to dig in deep. And the way that it's organized, I think, teaches you, well, you are at least seeing the way that certain things are intended to be used, like template parts. I basically learned how template parts work from using underscores. So to answer your question, I don't use anything like, as a, I don't know if smarty tags are still a thing, but they used to be. And so like, I don't use anything like that. I'm going to say, all right, you're going to be opening a PHP tag here. We're going to add the title. We're going to add this template tag here and then close it. Cause that's most likely what people are going to come across if they're reading other people's code too, in a lot of cases.
Yeah. It's funny that you call that being a purist, because it's less pure, I guess, than like true front end only development.
Right. Yeah. I'm a WordPress purist, I guess.
Yeah. Because I think it's hard sometimes to pull people into front end development with WordPress, because you're almost by default forcing them into a little bit of back end style languages. So it's real interesting. And I guess that's one of the potential benefits of WordPress becoming more headless over time mm-hmm. with the REST API. It opens up a lot more opportunities for people to use the front end templating and languages that they're more accustomed to. So
absolutely. And like the lines for, you know, like what is a front end developer is the constant question that's been asked over the last few years.
Yeah, now that's becoming even more drastic as, you know, JavaScript is more and more back end in addition to front end.
So. Yeah, you can't, you know, it's back in my day, you know, like I'm an old man.
It's getting complicated.
Right. And then, you know, again, introducing PHP into this just makes it even more complicated. So I'm really glad to see the direction it's going in. I have not learned React yet, basically because there's like too many dependencies and I just don't feel like, you know, like it's going to take me like a solid hour to get it up and running on my machine.
there's a great new thing where you can just do create React app or something like that.
Oh, nice.
And you can get like the very basics super quickly. Yeah, it's called create React app. So nice. Like you can at least get going
yeah.
for very little effort.
Yeah.
Let's talk more about that more modern stuff and then also just kind of learning by doing when I get back from the break. But first, let's take a quick break to thank our partner for this episode, which is Yoast. I hope that our readers are familiar with Yoast SEO because it is the most popular SEO plugin for WordPress. It runs on literally millions of websites. And if you've never heard of Yoast SEO Premium, then you can get that. And it offers a lot of great additional features like access to support and a redirect feature that I really like. Have you ever used the redirect feature within Yoast SEO?
No, I have not. I actually did not know they had that. So now I'm going to go check that out.
Yeah, it's actually really handy. So it'll automatically handle redirects if you change the slug on a post or if you delete the post, it'll help you send it somewhere else, somewhere smarter. And they also have an integration with Google Webmaster Tools with the commercial version and tutorial videos to get started with Yoast. And then, of course, the free Yoast plugin is pretty much indispensable. So it's an awesome tool, and I am very thankful to have Yoast as a PostStatus partner. I always love using it because it makes things so easy. Like when I put the conference page together for PostStatus Publish, just the ability to edit exactly the way the snippets will work, both in Google, but also in like Facebook and Twitter and stuff, with custom imaging and descriptions and everything is really awesome. So I just really love it. It's a great plugin. Been using it pretty much ever since I've been using WordPress. So thank you for the team at Yoast for being a PostStatus partner. Yeah, we talked a little bit about JavaScript there for a second, which yeah. I guess is inevitable to start talking about the new world of web development that's existing. And you said you hadn't gotten started with React specifically. It's actually an interesting time for that because something is going on right now that doesn't happen very often with WordPress, which is essentially a decision point of deciding which direction to go is something that's going to be a pretty big deal for a long while. So right now, the core team has been deciding whether to commit a new JavaScript framework to WordPress core, which will open up several possibilities. Certainly to use that JavaScript framework in the back end of WordPress, but also it would probably help push along a trend for using the same framework on the front end, just because then calling the framework to utilize it becomes simpler because you're just, you know, enqueuing that particular script or whatever and bringing it in. So the discussion's been around React and Vue. And I did a podcast with Joe Hoyle and Zach Gordon all about JavaScript and WordPress and stuff. And we talked a lot about the pros and cons of Vue and React and Backbone and stuff. And Backbone's already in WordPress. So I guess this would also be a little bit of a departure from WordPress and Backbone. I don't know how that would work. But it's interesting to just talk about the role JavaScript is playing in development in general, and also the role that it can play in WordPress development. And I'm curious to get your thoughts on the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting to see. Like, JavaScript back in the day used to be just used to, I don't know, change like button rollovers and like other things that like Flash used to do or whatever. But like, I mean, now it's a force to be reckoned with. I mean, it's Matt Mullenweg now famously said a couple years ago, like, learn JavaScript deeply. And I know he was talking in the context of WordPress, but outside of the context of WordPress, JavaScript is a very important thing. If you want to do like mobile apps, right, there's stuff like the Ionic framework, where you're essentially doing this thing where you have HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, and then you're talking to a server either through a REST API or something else, but you have these super lightweight files on the actual device itself, and you're taking advantage of the increasingly powerful browsers that exist now. I taught an HTML, well, I taught a 2D animation course at the University of Scranton in the last couple of years that was traditionally taught in Flash, and I don't know Flash, but I know JavaScript. And so we did a lot of stuff with the Canvas API and just tried out like drawing houses and animating things. And my students did some pretty neat stuff. So learning JavaScript, whether or not you do WordPress work, is incredibly important. And then I feel as every every single conversation in programming comes down to, you know, you need to pick your poison or pick your weapon. So I bet on Angular at first. So Angular was the thing that I learned. And now it seems like Angular 2 is out, which is a completely different thing. So I'm going to have to either just relearn Angular or put my money on React or Vue.js. And Vue.js is relatively new. Is that right?
Well, 2.0 is kind of a shift from the first one. It's not super new, but it's new in terms of how much of an upswing it's had in popularity. But it's been with Laravel for, like, very commonly used with Laravel for quite a while.
Gotcha. Yeah, so I guess I probably have departed from your question enough that I don't remember if I've answered it or not.
Oh, it's okay. You did pretty good.
Thanks.
I think what I'd like to transition into from that is, I think with the advent of JavaScript for everything style development, a lot of people that, you know, were pretty decent developers with their previous tooling are now like looking at the landscape and thinking that it's time to learn again. So it's interesting to me to see a lot of the learning resources that have come up around learning JavaScript and learning these specific frameworks. And I'm curious, I mean, Wes Boss is on my mind as like an amazing teacher. And I'm curious if you've taken his courses, and I'd like to talk a little bit just about like the value of learning by doing.
Yeah, so I took Wes Boss's JavaScript 30 course, which is incredible and free. So absolutely no money investment in that one. It's a no-brainer. And I took that just because the way I learned JavaScript was basically look at what other sites were doing and kind of copy that. So I feel like I didn't really have a good understanding of how JavaScript worked. I understand jQuery better. And then I signed up for his Node course, and I'm really excited to take that when I have some extra time in a couple of weeks from the time of this recording.
So JavaScript 30, for people who don't know, is 30 vanilla JavaScript coding challenges that you're set up to do in 30 days.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it is vanilla JavaScript. So it's, you know, if you're considering like Vue or React or Angular, JavaScript 30 is going to be a great thing to learn just so you understand like what vanilla JavaScript can do, because everything is built on that. And so vanilla JavaScript is doing the work at some point. But I know like when I knew jQuery primarily, there were things I was doing in jQuery that were actually just like remappings or like renaming of vanilla JavaScript things. And so like I didn't realize that just regular old JavaScript can do some of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. And one of the foundational things of what Wes does, and then I mentioned Laravel earlier, but Jeffrey Way does Laracast, and he does this too, is like it's really guided learning. So like you're coding while you're either watching a video or reading about it. And personally, like that's been what helps me stick to something the best is if I'm building along. Yeah. Is that something that you've discovered when you've taught and also when you've learned?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, there's like the classic, you are in a, well, for me, it's math class. So I'm in a math class and I'm watching the teacher do something and I understand completely what the teacher's doing at the time he or she is explaining it. And then I go home and do the homework and I'm completely lost because I wasn't doing it in class. I was just listening and I wasn't really 100% listening, right? You don't take in 100% of what you're seeing when you're listening to something, right? I think it's like 50% listening and then 60% watching and 95% doing or 95% teaching or something like that. So as far
that
as
that definitely didn't add up to 100, but I'll let you go with it.
it's a guided scale.
Oh, gotcha. It can overlap.
I told you I'm really bad at math. So learning by doing is definitely something that I do both in my in-person classes, and at WP in 1 month. And that's kind of the whole selling point of WP in 1 month is, hey, you know how to use WordPress. You're maybe not quite a developer yet, but you need to build a website either for yourself or for someone. I'm going to show you how to build that website. So like build a blog from scratch with WordPress or creating your business site or building a up and running with Beaver Builder is my most popular site and course. And we build like it's a space travel agency website with Beaver Builder. And so I'm not just saying like this is the slider module. Put in the slider module, choose the options. I say, okay, well, we need a slider to show all these fun places we're going to. And so I'm using like real content that I came up with. And I think that sticks a lot better. And when I teach my longer courses, like at the university, I would lecture one day and then the next day we would have an assignment, either a guided assignment or an assignment they're working on. And then they could ask me questions as they're doing it because I can explain how if statements work all day. But until they actually do it and see how it works and more importantly, how it breaks, you know, it's not going to stick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found that the same thing to be incredibly valuable. And the Shop Talk show, speaking of good teachers, Chris Coyer is also a very good teacher. And they have this thing that always cracks me up called Just Build Websites. and there's like this massive Just Build Websites like a little song that they did from a conference that they were at, and it's just so valuable to just start doing it. And I think it can get intimidating to know where to start when the web has gotten so complicated. I mean, you mentioned earlier like one of the reasons you're afraid of React is because of all the stuff that's ships with React,
right?
Or like tends to ship with React.
Yeah, and I'm a seasoned guy. I've been doing this for 15 plus years.
Yeah, so like it gets it can be very intimidating and tough, but I guess I want to encourage people that one, you probably already know more than you think you know, and something both of us have done is we've learned is like we're sharing what we learned, and that also helps kind of reinforce the things that you've learned if you like then re-express it to someone else. I find that to be extremely helpful. And you are always knowledgeable enough to give something to someone else. There's always somebody that's behind where you are, and you can share things in a way that can be informative for them. So don't be afraid to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a 100% great point. Even you know, when I'm eliciting requirements from a client and I'm trying to learn how they view their website, I always make sure to stop them and repeat back to them what they've just said to me. And that's the way that I absorb, and then the way that I also think through the implementation of what I'm doing. And the same thing can be said for if you're learning, you know, HTML. And that's a very important thing for the instructor to do too, is don't just talk at your students for 50 minutes or whatever. Even in my video courses, sometimes I'll pause and I'll say, what do you think the answer to this is? And then I'll tell them to pause the video. And then when we come back, I'll show them the answer. So when you're learning, be engaged. If you're teaching, make sure to engage. And as far as where to start for, if it's just general web development, like CodePen, also by Chris Coyer and his ilk. I hope I use that right. I use words incorrectly all the time. His people, I think ilk maybe has a negative connotation. Chris Coyer and his people, created CodePen, and that is an excellent place to start learning HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. What I would tell my students to do is just go and fork a pen and change something and see how the rendered window changes. And it's like a completely safe environment to do stuff in. You're not working in production. You're not doing anything that really anybody else is seeing. You're taking something that's already built and you're changing something, and then you're seeing how the result changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Super helpful. Yeah. To be fair to the rest of the founders of CodePen, it's Alex Vasquez and Tim Sabat, first co-founders.
Yes.
Another podcast shout out. Their CodePen Radio podcast is really cool.
Oh, it's so good.
Also sharing what you learn, but it's more about sharing what you learn about building a SaaS, which is really neat.
Yeah.
It's pouring down rain here in Alabama, by the way, if those of you that may be hearing thunder.
Ooh.
So I'd like to finish by talking about, if you were starting today, and let's say you've got these prerequisites of, you know, some HTML and CSS, but you wanted to dig further into the web, what would you want to learn first? Like, it doesn't have to be even WordPress related. Like, what do you think is kind of like, not maybe not just the new hotness, but like the type of thing that's here and it's also here to stay, you know?
Yeah. Wow. That's a really good question. So I know HTML and CSS. What do I want to learn next? Is that essentially it?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. So my next step would be some dynamic language. So like maybe PHP and MySQL, because that's where, or whatever is out there now. I guess you can be a little bit dynamic with JavaScript, but you really need like a REST API to do that. So, because that's when your websites start going from just static information to interactive. You need some dynamic language to have people really interact and submit information and get information from your website. So I'm saying PHP. I guess it could be like Python. That's a very popular language, especially in data analysis now, but some dynamic programming language to help people interact with your website.
Interesting. Cool. I think I'd be really tempted to just go a full JavaScript route, like just because you can interact, I guess, with a database just with JavaScript. So that's what things like Node are for. And yes, but I think I would personally dig deeply into like ES6 type and just vanilla JavaScript. And go from there.
That was like on the tip of my tongue, and then I thought, I don't know. I guess this is just probably because of the way I learned. Like Python and PHP very clearly separate the functions for me. So like HTML and CSS is for rendering and displaying a website, and then PHP or Python does like the heavy lifting stuff on the server. But, you know, to your point, everything is moving towards, you know, like JavaScript is definitely here to stay. Learning vanilla JavaScript is incredibly important because everything you're going to use from that point on is built on vanilla JavaScript. But I guess just the way I separated it in my head, I thought, well, you know, it's like a server-side language is maybe a good step to go. So
I think the main reason I say that, I think you can really specialize, like if you become like really well-versed within the Python world or the PHP world. But I think JavaScript just transverses so many verticals,
yeah,
like
yes.
the whole web, and like even stuff that's not even directly web based. You know, like it's just so huge.
I mean,
and it seems like it's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yep. Yeah. You see Mac apps that are driven by HTML, CSS, and JavaScript now, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a really great point. You know, no matter what you do, especially if it's on the web, you're probably going to run into JavaScript.
Yeah, it seems like everybody's looking for JavaScript developers as well. That might be influencing my choice.
that's a really great point. If you're looking for a job, JavaScript, or if you're outside the WordPress world, like Python is, because a lot of people are doing like data analytics, and I know like a lot of...
Mm-hmm.
Healthcare systems that are like doing stuff are doing it with Python. So
cool.
Your job advice for the week.
Well, hopefully people that have listened to this have gotten a little bit better direction in terms of how they can effectively teach and perhaps effectively learn and kind of where to go from here. So Joe, I appreciate you joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show. I'm an avid listener of the podcast. So I'm glad to be on it.
Awesome. Go to casabona.org to learn more about Joe. He's got links to WP in 1 month, which is where he sells courses. And he also has a link there to the How I Built It podcast. And it is an excellent interview-based podcast where he talks to folks. And unsurprisingly, based on the name, they talk about how they built something. So it's a really great show. Check that out, and also go to poststatus.com/jobs and find yourself a job, and poststatus.com/club and join the PostStatus membership club if you are not already a member. And if you would like to go to Atlanta in the early August timeframe, August 3rd and 4th, we are going to have an excellent event in person with lots of great speakers called PostStatus Publish. That's at poststatus.com/publish, or you can go to publishconf.com for that. It's a little sneaky URL.
Nice.
So
this PostStatus Publish is going to be my first conference post baby. So I'm very excited to go to this and see.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. See the WordPress peeps.
I'm looking forward to seeing everybody there, and we will catch you next time.